Yeah, all right.
So okay, we are now recording, I believe. Yes, we are recording. We're meeting today in Mount Fad United Church, and we're meeting with Alan and Nancy
Sinclair.
Would you please tell us your name and your age?
Alan Ryan Sinclair. A-L-A-N.
Yes.
B-R-I-A-N. You know Sinclair.
Not your age?
Oh, my age. I'm 64.
Okay. Nancy, would you give us your particulars, please?
Oh, the same, like, I'm Nancy. Mm-hmm. I was Nancy Dickinson Sinclair. Just about 40 years now we're married. Yeah. And I'm 61.
Okay. And what, do you know your parents' names?
Yes. Stanley Morris Sinclair.
Yes. And your mother was?
It was Pearl McHenry Sinclair. Like Catherine Pearl was her given name, but she was a McHenry and then married my dad.
And yours, Nancy?
But you want mine? Because I won't have. I'm from Guelph, so.
It's okay.
My mother was, she was born in Scotland, but came over when she was four, and she was Margaret Watt, and she married Angus Dickinson, A-N-G-S-O-N, and which the Dickinsons always lived like in Wellington County or whatever. But anyway, so, what else did she want? That was it.
That's
and
it.
Guelph's really where we are from.
Okay. You live around Guelph. Where did your family settle around the Ballarat community, and do you know when?
Well, I am not positive. My great-grandfather, I was born in 1833, to the best of my knowledge, and he...
Gilbert
was the first... that's as far back as I can. It was his father that came over. And he was Duncan, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think so, too.
Do you know where he came from in Scotland?
Islay. That's what we were told. Well, anyway, it was from Islay.
Okay. They came over as pioneers then, I presume. Yeah. Do you have any relatives living in the area?
I do. Not near as many as we did have, I'm sure. But, well, yes, we do have.
Lots.
Lots, yeah.
How did your family make a living when they first settled here, when Gilbert's father came over?
Farming. You know?
So it's, you've been farmers all through, right? Mixed farming?
Yes, they were, yes. I would say all of them were pretty well all of their life.
What generation was first to move off the farm?
Oh, I guess it would be my dad's generation. He had one of his sisters went to Toronto. The rest were all married to farmers, weren't they? Mm-hmm. My Aunt Elsie was the first one that went to Toronto that I know.
But you had, what about your grandpa's brother went to the States?
Oh, yes, and that's true.
John F. Sinclair's had two brothers, but one came back. But then he settled in the Toronto area,
yeah,
didn't
that's
he?
Right. Uncle Archie was.
But actually, John F. had
a stationary engineer in Toronto.
And the one brother went to where was that?
St. Louis.
St. Louis.
Okay.
And they lost track of him.
Where did your family come from before moving to this community?
Both of you,
I think, were from Scotland, weren't you?
Oh, I see. We're
originally.
My mother's half of my family, my own. They came from Ireland.
Ah.
The McHenrys were out of Ireland.
Okay. Where are we at? When you consider allegiance and nationality and your gut feeling about where you come from, do you think in terms of Canadian, Scottish, Irish, First Nations, any or all of the above?
Well, definitely. I like to think that I think I'm getting, but we were, my dad was sure, there's no doubt about us being Scots. My mother was pretty sure we were Irish, so you see. That's just, well, we were definitely thought Canadians. Of ourselves as Scotch, but we're Canadians for sure. But we're Scotch Canadians.
And you? How do you feel about this?
Well, definitely Canadian, but very much Scottish, because my grandparents, as I said, they still even had the Scottish accent.
She's a lot closer than I am to being.
To being Scottish, yes.
She's just one generation out.
You're a newbie. What church, if any, did your family go to?
Right here.
Right here.
My family did. Nancy's were
Presbyterians and well.
You see, we were here too. This was a Presbyterian.
Presbyterian first, yes. Was the community here largely Protestant, Catholic, no church, what?
Protestant, largely, except for the second house above the church here was a man by the name of Bill Cassidy when I was in. He was a Catholic.
Yeah? What, let alone Catholic, eh?
Wasn't he the second house, Jim, above the church?
Yeah, just past Shortle's Barner.
What do you know about Sandy McKay and Fallbrook Farm?
I heard of them all my life. It was one of my grandfather's first customers thrashing, and one of his last ones. So he was Sandy was, and my uncle played.
She maybe didn't hear your story on the thrashing machine, which was very important to the Sinclairs.
That was Matus. Sandy. I guess you weren't. I don't like to. I repeat myself badly anyway, but I don't. We were thrashing my uncle Fred and my dad were thrashing at Sandy McKay's, and I think it was in 1934 was the last year. I can't be sure of that, but I know they were done thrashing by 35.
And here's just another little bit too. This singly came from William McHenry, which I'd say is Bill Eileen's son. Yeah, I got that up at the archives.
And we were thrashing at Sandy McKay's. And it was in about 1934. And my dad was just up on the engine. There used to be an oil cup up at the cylinder of the engine you had to keep filled with oil. And he's filling. Sandy come walking out of the barn to have a smoke, and he's coming out towards it. And he says to my dad, I'm sure he was a pipe smoker, Sandy. I said, Bob was positive. But I better not say that, so to stroke that from the record, because again, he's not here to refute it. Anyway, my dad, he says to my dad, when he's going past, he said, she sounds just as good as the day they started it. And it started at Sandy McKay's in 1914, I think, the new engine when they got it. And he said, sounds just as good as the day that they started it, Stan. And my dad said he didn't get down off the thing till the crank made a turn and she put the cylinder of the engine. It started at Sandy McKay's and it finished at Sandy McKay.
It started in 19...
Well, that new engine, I'm just guessing. I think around 1913 or 14 they got the new engine, but I'm not sure. It was the first engine was got in 1905, and the separator, but they got a new engine sometime, and it started at Sandy's.
And it packed up in 1934.
I think in 34.
That's neat.
So we
something
were,
about
Sandy,
that place,
Sandy
eh?
Was always part of our family, because like I had said earlier on here.
Maybe you would have found it here, actually, wouldn't you?
Well, I'm just going by when they borrowed money, you see.
And when they got thrashing.
When was that? What year was that?
You not got your glasses, where are they?
Anyway. But she's probably seen all this. That's all I can go by when I am. Is the first one? Well, you see, 1906 they got the first one, and five. But then I'm not sure when they got the second one. Down here someplace they borrowed money again. That's probably it. Probably about 1910 they got that. So that probably was in 1910 it was new. That one. Anyway, they. Sandy McKay and my uncle Gear, who was Ross Shortle's father, or Ross Sinclair's father, they played violin all the time together at house parties. They were the entertainment locally, and either my aunt or I don't know. Do you know? Did Kate McKay play the piano? I think she did, but I'm not sure.
Yes, she did. With Eileen McHenry.
Nell had a piano. So I went to her place to practice my lessons in Georgetown, but I never heard of Kate playing.
Well, I won't say who, but I think it was her. And, I think it was her and Gear and Fred. Sandy went around the house. Fred didn't play. But around the house parties, they played at the mall. Sandy was a good violin.
Do you play violin yourself?
No.
We have Sandy's violin upstairs. We need somebody to play it.
It's too bad you couldn't. My uncle Gear always would say about my uncle Gear, Ross's dad, that he played a really sweet violin. The only trouble is he doesn't lean on it hard enough. He said, for when you want to be made heard, Sandy could lean on it.
Did you ever hear about the First Nations village on the ground between Fallbrook and Scottsdale?
Actually, I never did, only through Wayne. Wayne was the first guy that told me about that. Okay.
Where did you two... His spouse's family live in Balfad? No, they didn't, did they? Where did you two meet, and how?
Well, we met at Imperial Tobacco because I was a worker there, and so was my wife.
When was that?
1968.
We married in 69.
Yeah, we weren't long-term quarters. I didn't like running back and forth much. So but we've stayed at it for quite a while.
How many years?
Be 40 in
first
November.
Do you have any children?
Yes, we do. We have three. Two boys and a girl.
We have a John F. Sinclair.
Yeah, we have a John F.
Could I have their ages and names, please?
Well, John F. is...
September the 10th, 72.
Yeah.
And then Paul James, he's January the 27th, 76. Call her Katie, but she was Catherine Jane.
Spelled Catherine, please?
Yeah, C-A-T-H-E-R. Regular way. She actually had the name for Catherine the McHenry. She was Catherine James.
Oh, I've seen pictures of the two Kates.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's
right.
Our Kate.
That's your Kate.
That's my aunt.
And when was she born?
She was the 9th of January, 1980. And then our oldest son, he's a John F. Sinclair, and he named his son Stanley Sinclair. So we're carrying names on. We have a Stanley.
Well, we haven't really got... We've just been answering your questions here so far.
Yes, I want to go back to that in a minute. Are they settled in Balnafad or elsewhere?
No, they're elsewhere. They're
Fergus and Alora.
Yeah.
We're just below that.
Why did they move out of the area?
Well, because we never lived in
Balnafad. Well, you see, my dad, with all them kids, he moved... Well, I guess his brother Gear went to Milton, but my dad slowly started to move. We moved about four or five times, but we wound up at Guelph.
Okay. What did they do for work?
Farmed. Oh, my kids? Oh, my kids. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, my oldest son, John, he works for the University of Guelph at the beef research.
Mm-hmm.
And my next son, Paul, he's a diesel mechanic at Regional New Holland and Freelton. And Kate is a marketer for Ontario Pork. Yeah,
yes.
Pretty strongly, yeah.
Balnafad was a farming community from early days. What kinds of farming were there here?
Well, it's definitely, in the early days, almost subsistence farming was what it was.
Almost.
But it mixed farming. Everybody was mixed farming in this area. When I was a boy, there would be Bob McHenry, who was with an uncle of my mother's, lived up the seventh line here when I was a boy. He was pretty much a dairyman.
Yeah.
And actually, the next farm down to him was Cam Steen's farm at one time. It was sort of a dairy farm, too. But for the most part, when I was a small kid, everybody was mixed farming.
Yeah.
You know, had
What's the relationship of Cam Stein to the dairy in Erin?
He was probably was a great uncle to the guy that has the dairy in Erin, I would think. There was Waldy Steen was another one of them, and he was up towards Hillsburg.
Yeah.
But that's you have to take everything I say because we came back here all the time because most of my relatives were here.
Yeah.
And we were always up to date. It's like I could stop when I was coming through with the thrash machine. We come down here to thrash after I was up there when the local thrasher died.
Yeah.
We came and started thrashing for our uncles there. And if I stopped to get smoke or something at the store coming around the corner, why, you could be pretty sure Albert Dance or Matt Shortle, those same guys were sitting there from when my mother was a kid, they were still sitting there when around the corner.
Yeah. What were the main social activities in the community you got into that you can tell us about?
That I've gone into or in this one? Main
social activities around the FAD. Yeah.
Oh, well, the ones that I see, we mostly came back to them. So if we had right up till the late 60s, they had regular what we call presentations if a couple got married. So we came down if it was some relative or something, why we would be here at a presentation. Used to be, even when the hall was closed, when there was no hall here, used to be the Women's Institute used to have a dance at the Stewart Town Hall on a Friday night between Christmas and New Year's. Okay, so we'd bug mother and dad. My mother and dad had got past caring much about going to dance, but I used to like the old time dance, and that's where we would be there for sure once a year for that. It was before my time, but house parties was my dad said it was just a continual thing here through his young lifetime. And then have you done any research when you talked about that and about the church here? You see, this was a Methodist Presbyterian community, and then right up to 25 or 27, whenever there. But anyway, the hall, it used to be political, was a very strong thing here too. Like there was only two politics and very strong one as far as my people were concerned, but they had what they called the fives and the 95s that sort of controlled the hall at one time. The fives controlled the hall, which were the I gotta be careful, Joe, I don't want you throwing stuff at me, but the Tories were the fives. And they sort of had control. Like it was a voted board, but they sort of had control, and they didn't want the...
So the fives and the 95s were the parties?
Yeah, the
it wasn't the parties. It was how they said the makeup was in this area at that time.
Oh. 5%.
About 5% Tories and about 95% Grits. Yeah. So there was they were going to always remember that, and I shouldn't really... wouldn't really want this to be quoted because I'm not sure, but there was all to do about them young people wanting to have a dance in the hall, and they were going to stop them going in the old hall to have this set up for this dance. And I don't know, they moved. I leave her because I'm not sure who she was, but my dad just picked her up and started to decide to go in. The other thing, there was a big to-do, the court case about it and everything. It was quite a thing.
That was when your dad was young.
When my dad was boy, yeah.
What about sports, hockey?
Oh, well, I see, but when I was about five, we started to move away. We did, but and sports, my dad would be more likely to come and see if somebody got a new horse, what they got. But there was a good hockey team here. Floyd Shortle and Reg French and this guy here, and a bunch of them played hockey. Here.
The church has always been an important part of the community over the generations. Where did your family fit into the church?
Well, my mother was in the choir, and she was very much... And my father was not I like to say they were religious men. They just weren't church-going men. They weren't at all. My dad was not... We didn't do anything on Sunday, only what we had to do, and that was right through his life. He fell out with his brother-in-law over thrashing on Sunday. You wouldn't do that, but anyway, that we My mother was active and, you know,
even some of the baby bands and the mission
bands. Oh, sure. Yeah. I went to mission band here, too. Yeah. But anyway, they were, this was the center of the community. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. She had some interest in the history of the community.
Oh, for sure. My mother was, she worked for his dad. That was one of her early work jobs. Mm-hmm. He had the store at that time. She worked for him. And her dad died when she was 12. When she was 12. So she was out of school. She had written her entrance that year, but she didn't go to high school because when her dad died, they all were at home. But she went back. She went into and boarded in Acton and got her high school then later on. But she was always quite active. And Auntie was in the choir. Alma, I call her Auntie, because you see, we really were close to them, and they went on to the home farm, where my dad's home farm, her husband and her.
We did an interview with Alma.
We came home, went down home regularly. That's what we called it.
Down home.
Down here.
Did Pearl actually write some history, and did you find...
Well, Nancy went looking for that.
I think she had got copies from... Bill McHenry really got Mother into it, like when he was wanting to find out McHenry stuff so she could answer a lot of his questions. And that's even where she ended up getting some of the pictures, was really back through Bill McHenry when we got these old pictures of the when I showed you those, that grandpa just with all his sisters and that. That's where those pictures originally came from, was Bill McHenry, you see. I don't know where he got them. And then this is here I actually have found.
This is a really interesting book.
Have you got that book at all?
No.
So Mother was, this is Yeamans, which...
We're in
Yeamans
McHenry's.
Married into the McHenry's, you see. So it's really the starting of the Yeamans. And so Mother used to go to meetings because they'd be having meetings of, trying to find out information. And they ended up putting a cookbook together. But they actually have... This is where I do all my, really, where I started, really, all my McHenry information, because it's Yeamans. And,
got a lot of
but
writing
see,
here.
I go on and I carry it down, but they'll have, like, Generation 3, Generation 4, and so, you know, there's, like, Mother's great-grandparents, and then their kids, and so this is, when we talk about Squire of Fife, it goes to Fife's, and it just shows all the ways down. But so Mother was actually very involved in this.
Yes, she was.
And then you see a bunch of the women found like old recipes and made a book. But in the front of the book, there's actually a big introduction from different generations, but of ones for the Balmafet area and everything that was going on. So just going in a little bit farther. And look at here. There's all kinds of writing, so I don't know. A lot of it will be repeats, but it's probably stuff you haven't heard in a different way. And all of this is information before they actually get into the whole the recipe, and then they do all the generations at the back of the book.
That's fantastic.
So that's a great little book.
We'll maybe look at that a bit later, maybe photocopy some of it.
Yeah, some kind of interfering there.
Okay, overall, what was the best about living in Balmafet?
Well, it was considered home.
It was, I guess it was mainly just that it was home, you know, everything. We knew everybody. It's like J.P. Kirkwood was the, you know, everything sort of evolved around J.P. here. Mm-hmm. Or Ferguson's across the road there. They were, have you got much on them? Very interesting. Boys, they were.
Well, you could maybe tell that they
Pete,
want anything
Pete
for that
and Dunk.
Kind of
they were the. Well, their father was a wagon maker, and then they were blacksmiths. Very, and they married into the community. Massey Campbell lived on this farm that's now all built up here, and that Massey's sister was married to Pete. That's Pete, right. Yeah, Dunk was married to a. What was she? She was a.
She was fairly active.
Yeah, she was. But they were. Balmafet was full of. Nancy said when she was looking at the questions when we were driving down. She said, "Who was a Who were the, what was it, characters?
Characters.
Well, I don't know how interesting they were to some of you, but they were to us. Like, Matt Shortle is the only man I ever saw wearing spats. Yeah. Matt wore spats right for years and years and years after everybody else did.
Have any other stories on Pete or Dunk?
Yeah.
You used to take horses there for sure?
Well, yeah, you see, they did, but do you remember hearing them say that they actually, now it didn't last, and everybody went back to feeding Dunk. But when that fives and 95 things were going on, you see, Dunks were, and Pete and them were in the fives, and they brought another blacksmith. There was another blacksmith come in to balance fed for a wee while. He didn't
last. Because nobody would use?
Well, it was such a divide over this other thing, but it didn't last.
I can't remember his name, but I have run across him.
Yeah.
Or mention of him.
I'm sure they brought one in for just for a short time. You see, and Rogers, another same family that were really unique with Rogers. And Bert, when you were a boy, Bert lived across. That's where I think they put the other blacksmith in at the time. And then he had that shop as a auto shop. He had been a steam mechanic, and then he fixed cars and stuff. But the Roger brothers lived, if you went across past Prospect Cemetery to the next corner, the Tenth Line corner, they had 1,000 acres in there on both sides of the road run down. Both sides, they had their own sawmill, stuff like that. And Clayton and Ern were married. George and Bill never were married. And Bert was married. Bert was married to a Ferguson, wasn't he? His wife was a sister of the Ferguson boys. But they were really interesting guys.
Do you remember?
They had a thrashing machine. Didn't they run competition to the Sinclairs?
No, because you see, that was the thing. They did, but they never had much of a route because they were hard guys to get. Well, no, it wasn't so much that as they were guys that, you know, if you, my dad's whole family got along really good with them, but you could not get along good with Rogers if you wanted to. And they didn't need to. They had that because Bert Roger had worked for Case for years, so they were Case. They had a Case thrashing machine, and they would do. My grandfather, when his route was big, and the boys were looking after it, then they used to, you see, we went around mostly barn thrashed, where they did it in the barn, might thrash right up till Christmas. They pretty well always finished thrashing.
Oh, that answers a question.
At home at Christmas time, but you see, they would cut corn too, so my grandfather had a cutting box, but they only had one engine. So when the other one was thrashing, he'd go and get George Roger, just had one arm, and him and George Roger would take their Roger's Case engine and our cutting box and go and cut corn. So they were good neighbors. But you're right, they had their own outfit too, and they would, if that grandpa got behind, they could get Rogers to thrash them.
He lost his arm in a belt in a thrashing machine.
And did he ever hear?
Did you ever hear the story about that? Yeah, I don't really want.
It was supposed to be.
Said to
be the best rifle shot in the community.
With one arm, well, definitely with one arm, he was anyway for sure.
But just tell him
what was his name.
George Rogers, and they were a whole clan of them over there. But George had just the one arm, but he lost his arm, just like Jimmy said, in the thrashing machine, got caught and flipped it off the belt. And I guess he was reaching in to get something. Now, this is just what story goes, but you would never convince my dad of anything different because he knew George good. And they buried it inside the gate at the old cemetery.
Cemetery. Right?
Just inside the gate. They buried it.
Did you hear this story, Jimmy?
No, I never did.
Uh-huh.
And when they did, he was going, he had an awful time. Couldn't sleep at nights.
Yeah, for months he put on the pain.
Pain in his shoulder all the time. They finally got a doctor in Toronto that said to him, he said, "What were you doing when you lost your arm?" And I'd say, "I don't. You may have to take me to the bug house, they'll think I'm not..." But this is what the man told him. He said, "You got to go home." He said, "Well, he's just reaching, something was caught in the bearing, and he reached in to take it out and got caught in the bearing." He said, "I have a feeling his hand was closed when it was taken off." He said, "You've got to go and, do you know where it is, and dig the arm up and straighten his fingers out." And he wasn't there. My grandfather and some other...
Well, they knew what time it was that had been dug up and done.
Yeah.
And right that minute, wherever he was, the pain went out of his.
And we never heard any more about him. I remember him as an old man.
Oh, dear.
And that was certainly was the story that my father would swear by it to his death. But they were really unique. When you said the community was full of wonderful guys, and you'd hear Ern Roger was the one of the brothers that lived down there, was married, and when they would go to town, they were more to go to Erin or Georgetown to shop. Ern had a 37 Dodge car when I was a kid and used to stay down there. And in the winter time, if you heard, you'd hear the car coming across the town line here with the chains click, 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 click. And he'd have the chains on the old Dodge car. And in a few hours, you'd see George heading for Georgetown. He had a big old Packard, a 29 Packard. And you'd hear the guy, click, 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 click. The chains, they put the chains on, and once the winter hit, and they never took them off, and they clicking up and down the road. But that man drove a Packard car, and he just had one arm. He would set that big thrashing steam engine up on blocks to thrash, which is quite to cut corn with one arm. Now, you drive, you got to handle the controls and move it with one hand. That's quite a feat. But he was quite a guy, George. They were just quite a family.
How on earth did he survive?
Well, he could tie his own shoes. He could, if you knew Rogers, I didn't. I only knew them as real old men. But if you'd have told Rogers you can't do something, they would
he
have
would
made
show
certain
you how.
That you saw that you can do it. Anyone.
But, he could have died from losing blood.
Oh, well, I'll tell you that. I used to know where that happened. I think it happened over on the 10th line. And there was whoever my dad could see, there's the trouble. Nancy says, but my shouldn't have a better memory than I have. My dad would tell you whose place they were thrashing at, and she had been a nurse, the woman. And when he jerked the arm right out of his shoulder here, okay, right out, he had no stub, George. He was right out of the... When it did, of course, everything's bleeding, and he's right there. This woman, they hitched the horse to the buggy, and she had a 100-pound bag of flour. And she sat beside him in the buggy, and whoever drove the buggy, I have no idea any of that. And just when that would seep through, she'd just fill that full of flour again. And it slowed it down enough that they got him to Georgetown. That also, I you have to take it at my word, but that's the truth as far as I'm concerned.
Community first aid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, community first aid. Just was fortunate where they were, and lots of people might not have had a 100-pound bag of flour.
Yeah.
They just put it in the buggy at her feet, and she just kept putting it into the shoulder.
By the handful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it will, if you get a bad cut, for instance.
Yeah.
And even... Particularly if you're baking or something like that, you put flour on it, it'll stop the blood.
He's got lots of stories.
Blow it up.
Oh, that's good.
He was.
So, you know.
But Marvin, and they built, like, I don't know, it's still over there. Rogers built their own dam for they poured the cement and put the gates in the dam for the water. Like, it belongs to, I don't know who really has it now. Does anybody know? I guess you just don't run into anybody talking about it anyway. But that, they had 1,000 acres at one time on the 10th line.
Is there any offspring to them?
No, well, none that I know of now.
Can't find any.
I don't think there are any.
Yeah.
Because George was never married. Bill was never. Bill had, you talk about scary. Bill had a beard that was down like this one, an old man. And they had this sawmill. And we were just kids. And they used to saw, and we'd go get Norm to go over. Well, if anybody was getting lumber, you could get it from them if you knew them well enough. We'd go over one time, they were going to be sawing there, and I was just a young kid. Norm took us over, and Bert, or George was running the engine. They had the steam engine still on the sawmill. They had a steam engine right up till they sold out. It was there. But anyway, they had it on the sawmill, and Bill was up with Ern and Clayton up on the carrier for the saw, carrying the log back and forth. What a scary looking thing. He was a fairly tall man. Bill probably the tallest of any of them. Well, Clayton might be. But he had a big white beard, never was married. Him and George lived in, they built a log house on the land on this side of the road. Down there, and they lived in the log house down there.
Sorry, you won't be able to record two things at once.
Down at the ninth, on the tenth line, they lived in this cabin then, and then Ern lived in what we called their home place, and then Clayton lived the place above it. But eventually it was sold. It was a Brigadier Wallace. Do you ever hear anybody talk about him? He had the place.
Yes.
That's who had it. And I don't know who
it's
has it now because he's dead now.
And
he put that big house there. He bought Ern. I don't know whether they tore Ern's house down, I guess. I don't know.
No, it's there.
Is it there?
I believe. Wayne knows where it is.
Yeah, he will know where they are, all right, for sure. Well, I guess he told me a good story about when they lived at McKay's when he was a kid. They had a rabid fox or something got in at the barn there at Sandy. And the mother or something chased it out of the air, but then they went and got a hold of old George, and George and Bill went and hunted it up and got it. They were quite the guys. They might have done it with a body, with a live person, with a person too, if it upset them bad enough. quite the boys.
I have heard some intimation of that type of thing.
Well, I don't really think that. But another thing, when we talk about people in the community, now they were more down from the Glen, but they came up in there. My grandfather had worked for them a bit. Was Logan's? Do you ever hear anybody talk about the Logan?
Tell us about the Logan's.
The Logan's were stone men, eh? And of course, quite reputable ones. That was another story that we used to hear about the McGibbon House in Georgetown. The old man Logan, who was the guy that put them on the map, got started with the quarry and stuff, had raised all them boys, Norman, Harry, and that. They said that at one time he would light a cigar with a $10 bill off the stove in McGibbon House in Georgetown. I wasn't there. I certainly wouldn't have been allowed in there, even if I was old enough to be in. But that's, you know. That's folklore, I guess.
Money, easy come and easy go.
Yeah.
Were they gambling?
I don't know whether it was easy come, but it was easy to go anyway.
Were they gambling?
No, they weren't much of gamblers. They were very good drinkers, all of them. Because I remember my oldest aunt lived. She had her husband had the Linden was in between us over on the ninth line where my people were raised, where my aunt lived, and there was a swamp in there, a very narrow road coming up through there till they widened the road. And my dad's youngest sisters were down at their oldest sister's place.
Which is Bessie.
Bessie's, yeah. And they were coming from Bessie's home. They had an old pony to the buggy coming up the road home. And I guess the Logan boys were, I was on a bit of a party, and they had a big car always there. And they were sitting, I guess, in the middle of the swamp there, right in the middle of the road, all having a bit of a party there. And the girls come up, and of course, my grandfather had worked for the old man a bit when he was single. So anyway, they got up to there, and the pony they were pretty strong guys, all of them. Anyway, they picked up the buggy and walked the pony around the car and put them back on the road. So when they got up home, my grandmother, she says to my grandfather, when you come in for something, you'll have to go down there, John. The boys are acting up down there. Well, you just wouldn't want to upset them Logans too much, but Grandpa walked down, and a wee while they left. He said, you'll have to go out of here, boys. You're upsetting the community. So they left. But they
you know the story about the fire, the big fire at the McKay farm in the 50s, I think, when the dynamiters, who were heavy drinkers too.
They burned in a cabin there, wasn't it? Wasn't it across the road from Sandy?
Across the road from
Sandy's,
three of them.
Yeah, that's where Norm died, I think, and I forget what ones.
It was a Logan, was it?
Yeah, there was some Logans died in it. I don't know how many of them.
Three.
But I think a couple of them weren't Logans. They were just guys that worked for them, I think.
Okay,
I think
there
was maybe
a
one. I don't know. I don't really know too much about that, but I remember hearing it, all right. Anyway, I digress, and then you can't get on with your question.
Who cares? This is far more interesting.
Well,
so go on.
You're covering the questions even more.
But it was the...
Putting meat on the bone.
Jim was back on my... See, my mother, that was... Sinclair's were on one corner over there in the night, and across the road from them were McHenry's. And that was where my mother's...
Grandparents.
My grandfather, my mother's father, was raised right across the road from where my dad was. They were across the ninth line from
yeah.
them. They were, so that they were always together, worked together. They were a big family of a lot of boys in the generation, really before my dad's generation, but my mother's father, there was about six boys in that bunch too. Five anyway, mm-hmm. wasn't there?
Which house did Norm and Elma move into after they got married?
They
with
moved,
your parents?
They,
with their parents?
With my
your
grandparents.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was, yes. You see, we were from 27 till 38, they moved from what we call the home place over here, up onto to Frank Benny's, which was the first one up above that 37 acres that you want to claim. That I think,
right.
I think maybe
we'll let it go.
Garnet Sinclair's, well, Garnet's dead now, but they might quarrel because that was all my lifetime that belonged to Davy John Sinclair's family, that 37 acres.
Well, we'll give it.
But anyway, that was what we were in the farm above that. From they were there from 27 to 38. They moved up to that. Because the big brick house that had been built by them McKenzie, and then they built the new house down where Norm, where Elma and Norm lived. Then when they were married, it was new in 38, and they moved in 43, with my grandparents in there. Like they went in, that's where my grandmother wanted to move back down there as soon as they got that house built. She went back down there.
But then she died in 45.
She died in 47.
Oh, 47. Yeah, 47.
When it gets to an hour, yes.
When you come back to the Fat Allen and Nancy, what kind of...
Well, we don't know. It's like at one time we could drive, if I come over to the, went over to the ninth line, went into Urin and turned down the ninth line, even me, who never really lived there after I was five, four, after I was four, I could name you every mailbox from Urin to home. And maybe to Georgetown, right down the ninth line. Now I can't find one. See, Bill McLean was probably the last original one that was on there. He's gone now, so there is just nobody.
Yeah. No, they probably haven't gone.
And it's been in some ways good for the community because there's been a lot of fixing up went on to big old houses, you know, made it quite. But it's not. You know, I would say I was one of the last ones in my family that really looked at this as home down here, and I still like to come down. I like to go and tramp around the 70, but there's no real call to come home. Only once a year we come here for a reunion, and I say we maybe drive through if I go to see my aunt down there. I'll drive while she was able to get out fairly easy. I'd always Nancy and I'd pick her up. We'd have lunch and then drive up through. Go past all the old places.
You don't feel very well dropping into all these million-dollar estates.
No, the house that I was started out in over there now looks more like a mansion than someplace where I started out.
Why
do you think so many people have moved up in here from the city?
Well, don't you? I thought of it all my life. If we did get to go to the city, which wasn't often, we were only even in my time, we were only a hop. Skipping a jump out of the city of Toronto, and yet it was like sort of like being in the. my dad used to say about some of the farms that weren't great. He never regretted leaving as far as farming went. It was hard. A lot of this land was hard to work. Eh? He would say that it really isn't the backside of the world, but you can definitely see it from there.
Yes, the boondocks.
but it was, you know, everything. It was home when it was, you know, the road, you know, where the, between here and the sixth line going across, now they have it paved. There was stone that would always be out on top of the ground. The grader couldn't get it covered. Rock came right to the top there. Eventually, I guess they paved it over so you don't have any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. But people, like, There was all kinds of things were really. For instance, my grandfather. I shouldn't maybe when we got a minister with. I shouldn't really say that. You would find people that you won't now, but if you talk to some of the old McLeans, if they talked about my grandfather, they said it very nicely. But they would call him Baird, you know, because if you look back in history, the little church at the corner, Prospect Cemetery over there at the corner. There was a church there. When I was a boy, I think the footing's gone now, but the footing for that old building was in the corner of it when the old fence was right around it. Now, this is, again, this story goes, you see, there was a little church there, and this Baird was the minister. I don't know where else he ministered, but he came there and preached. But he preached the same sermon every Sunday.
Oh,
same
yeah.
Sermon. And my grandfather must have went sometime when he was young, because he memorized the sermon. So one very stormy day in the wintertime, he didn't turn up, and my grandfather gave the sermon. I kid you not, Donald McLean would call him Baird as much as he called him Lennon, just because that was the man's name. Well, he'd say John F., but if he walked down onto him, he'd probably say, "How are you today, Baird?" You know, it was just... It's kind of a silly thing, I know, but it's true.
We're going to interview Helen McLean.
Helen Brown.
Yeah.
Well, she was Donald McLean's.
Here's Little Willie.
Donald McLean's. this is Bill McLean.
Well, Alan, thank you for all your wonderful stories. I think that's a good place for us to end today, but I hope we can do this again sometime soon. Again, thank you very much.
It's been